Bear in mind, it's only a 22 truck, just 4 years old. That's started to rust already. It's had a few stone chips and stuff.
It was a Ford, of course it is.
But I've actually gone with the Ford as my favourite fast Ford. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show. Now, we are definitely not recording this just a few moments after we finished recording last week's episode, but for reasons that will soon become apparent, we are. Anyway,
so there we go. Can't tell, just don't mention it.
No, exactly. So that means that the editor of Classic Car Buyer, Jeff Ruggles, is still on holiday, which means we're joined by our resident guest podcaster, Amy King, former editor of Fast Four Performance Mini, and now works across all of our motoring portfolio. So Jamie, welcome.
Hello.
And Joe Miller, welcome again.
Hello. Good to be here again.
Right, chaps, let's go get into it, because the news this week is, well, it's the usual sort of rumbling on of things, but the one that news item I wanted to touch on was that the Federation of Historic British Vehicle Clubs, and I always get that the wrong way around.
FBHVC.
For we sure. often shorten it to the Fed because it sounds cooler. But the Federation issued a response to what's called Martin's Law legislation. I'm not going to try and get into the detail of it, mainly because I don't understand all the detail. But Martin's Law is the response to the sad events that happened in Manchester, the Manchester bombings in the arena. Years ago. And effectively what it's designed to do is to tighten up on venues and event organizers' responsibilities to security. That fundamentally is what Martin's Law is about. Now, the reason it's a challenge, of course, because like a lot of laws, you end up with unintended consequences, is that the burden and the responsibility that pushes onto even potentially small local classic car meets and car shows and things like that is quite considerable, because it's all about the thresholds of how big an event should be before the provisions of Martin's Law need to kick in and what security protocols you have in place. So you might just have a little 50 to 100 car gathering in a local village green and completely staffed by volunteers, and the gate fee might all go to charity, in which case there's no business model at all for it as a gathering. And yet potentially it could be impacted by the requirements of a Martin's Law. So it's quite challenging, but I think it just opens up to me a general existential challenge with events in general, because I think there's so much that goes in hand now with organizing events. I think people don't realize quite what it is, whether you are talking about a local village show or some of the bigger stuff that we and others do, like 25,000 people at Silverstone is obviously a massive undertaking, but actually we shouldn't underestimate how much it takes just to get a couple of hundred cars parked up in a field.
Well, particularly more so because potentially in some cases it could work out more of a workload. Because let's not forget, when you've got a whole events team consisting of dozens and dozens and dozens of people, as we do, it's, you know, you can make a big event like that happen. Whereas if it's a, like you say, a classic car club where it's a, you know, board of people that might only be half a dozen volunteers, it's easy to see how hard it can be to make something like that happen. But like you say, it doesn't mean that the implications are any less. I think if you're going to be hosting any kind of event, there is that kind of no risk, no reward. You know, you have to accept that once you get the public involved, there's health and safety concerns and what have you. But it's, like you say, it's knowing where to draw the line.
Well, you're relying on volunteers, and even getting volunteers for anything is proving to be harder and harder these days. I mean, there's just, I think we're all so busy with our lives. The idea of being able to spare another, you know, weekend or an evening organizing car meets and things like that is hard. And then you need enough of them. I was talking to a club the other day. They need 15 volunteers for every show that they organize. 15 people to give up their weekends and their evenings in the planning of an event, just to get people parked safely, into a building safely, make sure that, you know, display cars are all set up and the traffic's okay and you've got toilets and first aid and all these sort of things. These are all absolutely imperative to make sure a show runs well. It doesn't impact on local residents, that there's medical provision in case anyone, you know, feels unwell or whatever. You know, these are all things that we take for granted, but would soon be judged if it went wrong. Do you know what I mean? So it's just, That's the dilemma, I think, really. And Martin's Law is just one element of it, an entirely worthwhile initiative in the light of what happened in Manchester all those years ago. But the ramifications on a sort of small volunteer led club trying to run a show is quite significant, really. So yes, my heartfelt thoughts to everyone trying to organise events, because we know it's not easy. And all you can hope is that venues and organisers work closely together to ensure that people that participate in these events, whether you're public or exhibitors, can do so safely and still have a good time. Yes, that's our serious segment.
But also on that, I would say support your local car events, because even if it's just going to them and putting a quid in a bucket on the gate, go to it, be part of it, make sure these things happen. And if you can spare a day or an evening or a weekend to help, do it. Because with lack of people being interested, lack of people offering the time, that's how you end up with things like the Brighton speed trials ultimately being binned off because they couldn't get the manpower to do it. We're in this for a hobby. Yes, some of us call it a career and a job, but also this is ultimately for the love of cars. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it. Get involved, make it happen, and keep the community alive. So if you can spare any of your time or any of your money or whatever, do it. Keep it going.
Yes, absolutely. Hear, hear. Totally agreed to that. So, yes. Well, look, last week's chat show, we challenged us all to find big BHP bargains, which was a deliberate attempt to avoid the subject of Fords, because Jamie was the editor of Fast Forward for a long time and still remains quite closely aligned to the Ford scene. He's doing up our Mondeo ST24 project car as we speak.
Slowly.
If he's not matting down the perfectly good paint. If you listen to last week's episode.
Now we've moved on from that. That's fixed now.
It's fine. We live and we learn. But anyway, it would be rude not to cover Fords in some capacity or another as you're on the chat show for another week. So the idea was I wanted to ask one basic question followed by a kind of buying choice roundup, which is why are fast Fords so expensive? Like, why do they garner the sort of values that they do? Because they probably weren't considered class leading when they were new, arguably, and they still remain kind of a bread and butter sort of blue collar badge. It's not a prestige badge like a Rolls Royce or a Bentley. And yet the prices of even relatively mundane stuff is surprisingly high. So I wanted to pose that, but then after that, I want us to choose our favorite fast Ford and then consider one or two alternatives that we would consider in lieu of our proposed fast Ford choice, if that all makes sense. So Jamie, let's start with you. Why are fast Fords so expensive?
Because they're bloody brilliant.
End of discussion. Thank you for watching. Goodbye.
Yes, thank you very much. There you go. That's all you need to know. No, it is a good question. And I don't think anybody knows the actual answer for it. My best guess is because they're like the poster car of the working man from the 80s and 90s and whatever. And they're now at a point, they did drop. I mean, I bought a Cosy with my student loan, actually. I spent £3,000 on it.
God.
For viewers, I still owe £10,000 on my student loan and I'm now 41. So, but that's money well spent. Never mind. Yeah, so it's sort of, I think because of where they were, like I say, there was just a pin-up car for that generation, and that generation has now got the disposable income to spend on said car. As for why they're all dragged up, I think it only takes one or two real halo models, like a real low-mileage RS500, to go for £100,000, £200,000, whatever it is. And then everyone with an RS500 goes, well, my car's got to be worth this. And then when the RS500s go up, everyone with a normal, regular three-door Cosworth goes, well, if that's worth that, mine's got to be worth this. And it just drags all the prices up until you get to the point where you've got a standard Sierra Azure, someone going, it's got to be worth 10 grand because that Cosworth is worth 25. and it does go through. Maybe the Azure is a bit of a Mickey take, but certainly it filters down to even like the XR level. I mean, the XR was always the warm hatch to the RS badge, but they're commanding strong money now, and they're arguably rarer than the actual RSs, because obviously if it had an RS badge on it, it never got scrapped, whereas XRs did. And now you're looking at, you know, there's probably more Sierra XR, sorry, more Cosworths on the road than there are XR 4x4s, but certainly more than XR4Is. So yeah, that's where I think. They are still reasonably affordable when you look at them compared to like the Exotica of Ferraris and the real sort of classic car sort of stuff. Yeah, there's it's not just that much. It's that whole performance sector. So Fords were big at that sector in the 80s and 90s. But if you look at things like Lotus Carlton and other oddballs that were around at the same time, they're all through the roof because they were pin-up cars for that generation.
I mean, just let's talk this through a little bit more. Like, you've got Sierra Cosworth, particularly the hatch models, fetching what, 80, 90 more?
And yeah, 100 up.
100 grand. Like, there are lots of sort of very premium Porsches and things like that you can buy for that money that I can't compute. In my head, it's still ultimately a Ford Sierra, not the 1.6 GL we had when I was a kid, but a Sierra nonetheless that's fetching Porsche or even Ferrari money. I mean, yeah. it's It's extraordinary.
Well, I say, it's because of that sort of like nostalgia back from, if you factor in things like the rally history and particularly the touring car history of the Sierra Cosworth, that's, you know, and there was what, 5,000, 6,000, whatever it was, made of the 5,000, I think, of the three door, a few more of them, which is the Sapphires. But the survival rate of the Sapphires is really low because obviously they were all chopped up because they were a £3,000 car that students were going out and buying the early 2000s. They were all chopped up and the engines were put into Focuses and Fiestas and whatever else. So the actual Sapphire Cosworth has disappeared. The Escort's probably been the only one that sort of stayed along and is not really, I mean, obviously, values for the Escort Cosworth are going sky high as well. But that hasn't really been butchered in any way, shape or form like the two previous Sierras were. But you've got the rally heritage for the Escort. So, they're very sort of famous in motorsport circles. And it's that pedigree, I think, that people, that sort of plays on people.
That's a good point about the pedigree. What about you, Joe? What's your thoughts on fast forwards?
I think, saying this as someone who's outside of the Ford scene, you know, I've never owned a Ford. My dad's not a Ford man. We're not a Ford family. I've never been anywhere close to Fords until I got into this job. I think nostalgia is a very powerful drug. And I think when you look back, particularly at Ford in their heyday in the 80s, you know, when you got these big posters of RS Turbos and XRs and Cosworth and so on, the halo value of a Ford was all but untouchable, you know. And there were better, like you say, there were better cars on the market. Rather than XR3, you could have a 205 GTI, a Golf GTI, Renault 5 Turbo, Fiat Uno Turbo, so many other things that were genuinely better. But they didn't have the marketing power of Ford. And to a certain extent, I think at around that time, there was still a degree of not made over here. You know, I mean, a lot of Fords aren't technically British cars, but we still think of Ford as a British brand, whereas a Renault or a Fiat or a Peugeot was still thought of as foreign. So the idea that you would have something that's got the image and the performance and is British, inverted commas, I think that's what drives it. And ultimately, that's a generation where you grew up wanting one of those. Nostalgia plays an enormous part in that. You know, regardless of the quality of the cars, the fact of the matter is, that's what spoke to people then, and that's what still speaks to them now. And that bedroom wall poster thing, I'll have one of those one day. Like you say, Jamie, by the time they've got the disposable income, suddenly everyone wants them, and they're not making anymore. So supply and demand, it drives the values up. And I think I've been quite open about the fact on video before that I don't see the value in a lot of them. Mark II XR2s, I think I kind of do, but there's quite a lot of them I don't see the value in necessarily. But when you add a good dollop of nostalgia into the equation, like I, much as I don't agree with a lot of those prices, I can see how they achieve them.
The nostalgia thing is also interesting as well, because there's a lot of family heritage, especially in that southeast, where if you think of how many people Dagenham used to employ. Yeah. So everybody's got family ties with Dagenham and Ford and whatever. Going on to the British built thing, yes, I know like cars like the Cosworth and whatever else were all built in Belgium, but all the development work was done with SVE in and around sort of Essex and sort of down the southeast corner. So there's a real strong sort of family tie and sort of personal connection to the brand in that area. I mean, for me, the reason I like them is because I grew up in an era where I probably should have been a JDM fan. But
yeah, actually, yeah.
I sat in my mate's Sapphire Cosworth, my dad's mate's Sapphire Cosworth, where I was like 13, 14, whatever it was. And I just went, I've got to have one of these. Well, he's actually, I sat in his RS500 first, but I sat in his Cosworth and was like, I've got to have one of these. And it, for me, it was the fact that you could go out and buy one for £3,000. You could go and speak to, back in the day, it was Woodford Garage. On the phone, Woodford Garage down south. Yeah, oh, what, a set of this, set of that, set of green, set of free bar map sensor. But order a box of goodies that'll turn up for like £500. Put them all on your driveway and you've got a 300 horsepower car that you could just drive like an absolute loon, and it would keep up with those cars that were costing 25, 30, 40 grand, even back then. Evos and Imprezas were probably the biggest rivals for the Sapphire Cosworth, like the cheap budget SAFs that I was driving. And it's like, you know, £500 on some tuning bits, and you'd keep up with one of them. All day long. And it's madness, really.
Can't deny the appeal. And we've got our own Ford Fair event coming up at Silverstone on the 23rd of August. So lots of fast Fords will be on display there. So do check it out. Now, to move to the second part of the buying subject, we would normally sort of go round one choice at a time. But what I'm going to propose we do for this one is, well, I'll go to Jamie, who's going to tell us his favourite fast Ford. And then you're going to give me the one or two alternatives to that choice of fast forward, and we'll do it that way. So Jamie, hit us with your favorite fast forward. You can choose anything of the model lineup, and there's been lots of fast forwards over the years. So your fast forward of choice is, sir?
Well, we've mentioned this already a couple of times, but it's got BTCC heritage. It is, of course, the Mondeo ST24.
Me, best car.
It isn't. It is the Sapphire Cosworth. It's got to be a Sapphire Cosworth. Specifically, the two-wheel drive Sapphire Cosworth for me, just because it's the best driving of all those Cosworths, badged Fords. And I quite like the understated looks of the Sapphire compared to the big Larry whale tail and stuff of the three-door. The driver dynamics are actually slightly better. And yeah, it's just rear-wheel drive, easy to tune, just fantastic car. I'd have another one in a heartbeat, even though it would ruin me.
Wonderful car.
And did you say you owned one?
Yes, yeah, when I was 18.
Wow.
$3,000+ it was, I suppose, paid for it on the first year. And second year loan, which was another $3,000+, went on rebuilding the engine and gearbox. And then the third year student loan, which was another $3,000+, went on repainting it and doing the trim and new glass and whatever else.
Amazing. But let's suppose you couldn't have that Ford Sierra Sapphire Cosworth.
Or they cost $30,000 or $40,000 and you can't afford one.
I'd have another Cosworth. But I'd have the Mercedes 190E Cosworth.
Whoa.
The prices of the 2.3 versus 2.5, they're not the same. The 2.3 is considered to be the better driver's car, and it's because of the pedigree of the 2.3, it's slightly more expensive. But a 2.5 is more powerful. Arguably, I wouldn't care, I'd have either. I just like that sort of, again, it's the same start, it's the same reasons I like it. It's the 80s DTM sort of appeal to it, and it's just lovely car. And if I didn't have that, another one, bit of an oddball one for a Ford fan, is I'd have a Vauxhall. And it would be specifically, and you don't see these anymore, Bolton GSI 3000 24 valve.
So that's specifically a great 24 choice.
Valve, not the 12 valve as well. The dual RAM, 204 horsepower, 200 whatever it was horsepower.
And it's got a digital dash, hasn't it, inside?
I remember seeing the same engine they put in the Senator, wasn't it? They put in the Senator and stuff as well.
Sorry?
Wasn't there a Carlton GSI that went up for sale at Hobbs or something?
Hobbs Parker, yes, it was absolutely mint, and it did have the digi dash. You're quite right. Yes.
And I'm sure didn't sell for huge money.
No, because it doesn't attract the Ford tax. That's why it didn't sell for very much.
I mean, good for the Vauxhall, but actually as a comparative bargain to the Sapphire, that would have been a really good choice.
Definitely. Oh, that's a left field one as well.
That's a great choice. Okay then, Joe, we've got a whole range of fast Fords we can choose. So what is your choice of fast Ford?
So my fast Ford... So, I'm of the 90s generation. I was born in 1998, and I'm just on the tail end. I grew up playing Sega Rally quite a lot, and that still resonates with me. So obviously the Ford of that age and that era is the Escort Cosworth we've touched on before. And the Escort Cosworth is very cool in its own right, Martini livery, rally stage, pick stuff. But for me, the Escort Cosworth is just a little bit too Larry looking. I can't quite get on with the looks of it. So take the Escort Cosworth package in something a little bit more subtle. And gentlemen, you end up with the Sierra Sapphire Cosworth.
Good choice, sir. Good choice.
It's a fantastic car. Four-wheel drive in my case, because I quite like the idea of like it being a blue oval Subaru Impreza. But yeah, very, very cool. We did that video on one a couple of years back, and I thought it was just fabulous. I did like Sapphire Cosworth. But again, cool though they are, and tunable though they are, and fast and practical, et cetera, they are also a $30,000 or $40,000 car now. So that's a bit steep for me. I'm thinking, let's stick with, if you want a more budget alternative, trace the routes through. I'm a bit abstract here, but go with me. Trace the lineage through to the Escort Cosworth, 90s rallying hero. Lancia Integrale is way out the window now. They're silly money as well. But 90s rally car, four-wheel drive, turbocharged, 2-litre, big spoiler. Gentlemen, the Toyota Celica GT4.
Interesting choice.
Which Jeff touched on last week, of course. A couple of weeks ago, I should say. For me, it would be the 205 with the sort of quad, the bug-eye front end rather than pop-ups. I think they're uber, uber cool. And again, they seem to have bucked the trend for JDM cars of going silly in value, because you could still get into one for $10,000 or so, which you ain't getting any sort of Cosworth for that money. And you're not getting much fast Japanese for that money either, but eminently tunable, tough, four-wheel drive, turbocharged, just super, super cool. So yeah, I'm a big fan of the Celica GT4.
Excellent. Do you have another choice on your list?
I do, actually, because I was thinking, again, I thought quite abstract, but it's me, why not? Saf Cosworth is late 80s, early 90s, four-door, four-seater saloon car. Sort of, what are they, 230, 240 horsepower, a standard, something like that. They're a fast car. So I've gone Alfa Romeo 164 3-litre V6.
Okay, I did not see that coming. That's impressive.
They look extremely... I love the way they look. They've got the Busso V6 with that chromed intake manifold that you can't put on the internet without blurring out. It's just beautiful. And they sound like nothing. A turbo dump valve has got its place in the world, but a Busso V6 is unrivaled.
Yeah.
And yes, it'll break your heart and take your wallet if you own one. It's an Alfa Romeo, of course it will, but it's just wonderful. And as quick as a stock Sapphire Cosworth as well. They're sort of 140-mile-an-hour car. So yeah, that... Very left field. And again, you won't get the ease of maintenance that you do with the Ford, but on the day it works, what a special thing.
Very pretty car as well, isn't it? It looks amazing. So yeah.
I really, really want one of those.
How much would one of those fetch if you could find one? I mean, they're so rare. How much would one of those fetch?
Yeah, this is the problem. It's not so much how much are they worth, it's are there any for sale? You know, I've seen mint ones sell for 15-ish, something like that. So again, you're not into any sort of Cosmos for that money. There are okay ones on the market every now and then for $5,000 or so. And I think it's one of those cars where you can't really say buy the best you could afford. The advice for an Alpha 164 is if you want one, buy the one that is on the market at the time. You know, you can't be picky, but if you can stick with it and commit to it, what a fabulous car.
The 164 is one of those cars as well that wasn't bettered by its replacement. The 166,
no,
I think,
really.
Is an inferior car to the 164.
Underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so that's a very left field choice, I'll admit. And there'll be people to point out it's front wheel drive, so you're not going to slide it around and it doesn't have the tunability of the Ford and blah, blah, blah. Comparing like for like a stock SAF Cosworth to a stock Alpha 164, Alpha all day long.
Very good. I applaud that choice. Well, I mean, obviously, there are so many fast forwards. We've said that, you know, there's a back catalogue that goes back decades, sort of covering, as we said earlier, Ford are brilliant at creating the halo model, which then sort of scatters stardust over the whole range, whether you're talking about a Fiesta Popular or whatever, you know. But I was a child of the 80s and grew up with XR3Is, and I was particularly smitten by Escort RS Turbos, I think, particularly. I love the alloy wheels of a Mark IV shape Escort RS Turbo. Anyway, that would have been my choice, but I've actually gone with the Ford Sierra Sapphire Cosworth as my favourite fast Ford. So we've all picked the same one, which I find bamboozling. And normally with an exercise like this, I think we'd probably all be conferring beforehand, saying, right, well, let's just swap our choices. So we've got three different choices. But actually, I think it's just fascinating that all three of us have chosen it. And there must be something in that. I can't imagine.
Verdict. There you go. That is the best fast Ford, is the Sapphire Cosworth. End of.
I wouldn't argue with that.
I'm not a purist like you, Jamie, so I'm going to be the heathen that says I would probably have the four-wheel drive one, which I know blights the performance and makes it a bit more leaden. But Joe referred to it earlier. We did a bit sort of RS shootout a few years ago where we had a Fiesta RS Turbo, an Escort RS Turbo, and the Sierra Sapphire RS Cosworth four-wheel drive. And what I was pleasantly surprised about, having never driven any Sierra Cosworth before then, was just quite how grown up it felt. Like, it's actually not even that fast, dare I say. It doesn't feel fast, put it that way. It just felt really mature and, dare I say, almost Teutonic.
Like, yeah.
It feels quite solid, quite weighty. I think you could drive that around every day. I think you could blast down to the south of France or to Germany or something. I just think it would feel a really weighty, substantial car with a bit of grunt when you want it. Brilliantly engineered. I think that engine is fabulous.
It almost felt like an Audi or a Mercedes in some ways, didn't it? Yeah, it's such a... After all those wild child fast forwards of the 80s with the big wings and the three-spoke alloys and the coloured pinstripes and so on, to have a car that's got a light that it keeps hidden under a bushel is actually quite refreshing.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately burst that bubble a little bit. They're not that reliable, and the light that comes on is generally one on a dashboard, not under a bushel.
But presumably, if it did, you'd be able to fix it. It'd be easy to fix it. I mean,
it'd be easy, but it'd be expensive because you're back to Cosworth tax again. So any bit like a window switch, for example, is the same on any Sierra gear because it goes in a Cosworth. Oh no, that would be £4 for that Sierra gear one, but it's £40 now, please, sir.
Right.
So, in light of that, then, Phil, what would be your SAF Cosworth alternatives?
Well, I'm not even sure how legitimate some of these are because in terms of an age range, they might not even entirely spread. But I remember seeing a Vauxhall Cavalier GSI 4x4 Turbo.
Yeah,
so that was always a big rival. Yeah.
So the crossover is only a couple of years, isn't it? Because I think, I don't know what we're talking, early 90s. So the crossover is not huge, but it is there. I just remember seeing one of those for sale for about $10,000 thinking, wow, what a cool car for the money. Again, pretty much a practical family saloon, but it's turbocharged and four-wheel drive, and actually the styling is a bit more futuristic, a bit more aerodynamic than the Sapphire.
Definitely liked
one of those. And I haven't even looked up the power output of my second choice, which is the Peugeot 405 MI16 thingy. I think it's lower powered, isn't it?
It's about 160, 170, so it's not quite on SAF Cosworth,
but it's probably a bit lighter. It's probably a bit lighter, and it's probably nicer through the corners than a SAF.
Controversial.
Naturally aspirated as well, so it's not bad to be only sort of like a little bit down on power, sort of 40, 50 horsepower.
Again, you've got to find one now. You're probably in 164 levels of rarity. But I remember loving the 405 when it came out, and I still like them now. I think they're quite rare. They've all been scrapped, haven't they? And, you know, but
they suffer the same fate as the Cosworth, where they're all getting chopped up for their engines. But instead of putting them into Focuses, they stuck them into 205.
Gone in 205, yeah.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. Does anyone remember the advert for the Peugeot 405 where they set the fire to that sugar field, sugar beet
field?
Yeah,
the burning cornfield. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why do they make car adverts like that anymore?
Was it Berlin, Take My Breath Away, the Top Gun music?
Top Gun.
But they got into loads of trouble because it seemed to be promoting arson or something. So they actually got into trouble for it, I think. But
there's
a
topic for a future podcast, best car adverts. I think we could do a whole podcast on that alone.
There we go. Yeah. Well, make a note of that.
Sierra Cosworth on the Sands one, when they're following along with the original Sierra Cosworth driving along, whatever it was, Sands. Yeah, lovely. Obviously, 2 minutes later, the car rotted and fell apart. But that's not the point.
Excellent. Well, look, I think that was a very interesting roundup and a glowing endorsement for the Sierra Sapphire Cosworth. So
if
that hasn't pushed the values up even higher, I don't know what will. But
I don't think Sapphire Cosworth are in any need of any value appreciation.
Well, listen, so we're up to that segment now where I want us to tell us what we're all up to. I'm going to say in the near future, because by the time this goes out, it's about 8 days away. But so you've got to look into the future. But I believe, Joe, the reason that we're recording this a bit earlier than anticipated because you're off British Superbiking, is that right?
I am. I'm going to Alton Park. I've never been to Alton Park before. I've been to quite a few circuits around the country following BSB, but yeah, Alton Park for the first time. My dad and I go and camp and stay in the van and, you know, all that sort of malarkey. But yeah, it's the opener of the season. I won't go too into it because I know you two don't follow it and aren't interested, but I'm so excited. It's going to be a massive season. I think, unlike Formula One, I think there's probably 8 or 10 different people that could win it this year, and it won't be a follow my leader type thing, I don't think. So yeah, I'm super, super excited. And anyone listening who doesn't follow it, I urge you to go and watch the 2024 finale race around Brands Hatch. The last two laps, just the best bit of motorsport ever, in my opinion. So,
and just out of curiosity, Joe, I mean, you have shown us that clip, and I have to say it was heart in the mouth stuff, just the final lap, let alone however many laps it is. But when you turn up at these bike meets, do people turn up in anything interesting, either bike or car related?
Sometimes people turn up on a lot of bikes, obviously. And again, I remember there was a chap next to us, we turned up, we were very impressed with his new Ducati Panigale and rather less impressed with the tent that he had, as a result, had to stay in because it was all he could get in the little box on the back. Car-wise, there's some. There was a 205 GTI at one of the rounds we went to, actually. But yeah, it's predominantly bike stuff. And we've ummed and ahed about taking bikes, and it's all well and good until you realise you've not got a tent or anywhere to get out of the weather or to cook or anything. So yeah, we're quite happy to go in the camper.
If you're going for the day, take a bike.
I know you've posed this question before, Joe, but I'm quite keen to ascertain whether bike people are into cars and car people are into bikes. I mean, you're definitely an example of someone who is into both. It often fascinates me. I do think people generally are interested in most things petrol, even if they don't own a bike, they're probably interested in bikes,
exactly.
And the mechanical engineering of them all.
The appreciation for the technology, exactly. And I think be very keen to hear from anyone listening. Do you ride bikes as well as do classic cars? Because I think there's definitely some crossover, 100%. So yeah, that's my weekend. And I'll tell you what, here's the thing then, because we're going to make this a weekly thing, we will know by the end of the year who's won it. So I'll do a prediction who's going to win it now, and then we'll come back at the end and see if I was right. So my prediction is going to be Carl Ride on the Nitrous Ducati is going to win it, but we'll come back at the end of the year and see if he's won it. So there you go. Jamie, what about you? Not as bikey as me, I would assume.
No, actually, I'm going to completely other end of the spectrum. And my job, because it's bank holiday weekend coming up, and one of my little jobs I've got to do is rust-proof the Ford Ranger, my daily truck. We've got some left over from when we did the Orion, actually, which obviously there's a video on the channel if anyone wants to go and watch. So we've got some left over. And I've noticed that on the front, like, rock crawl bar thing it's got, bear in mind it's only a 22 truck, just 4 years old. That started to rust already. It's had a few stone chips and stuff here.
It's a Ford, of course it is.
Yeah, but that bit isn't. That bit's bolt on. So that bit's aftermarket. Give it a good jet wash, get it up in the air, treat it to some Lanigard stuff, make sure it's all good. And it also means that what we can do is we can have a bit of insight, and I can put that back on the ramp at the end of the summer, over winter, and have a look and see how it's holding up. So we can actually sort of really sort of assess the Lanigard stuff and give you guys a proper feedback on what it's like in real world stuff. Obviously, we've done the application on the Orion, and I'll get that back actually as well, because I know the guy who owned it. So I will get that back at the end of the year and get that up in the air and have a look as well. But that'll probably do less miles than my beloved truck, which will do lots and lots. So it'll be interesting to see how it holds up. So
that's very good.
My plans, that and trying to get them one day ready potentially for Classic Ford Show, which is what, the weekend after?
The weekend after, yeah, Sunday
he's
the 10th of May.
Scratching, isn't it?
Yes, the scratches are fine. It just wants an MOT, headlight sorting, a tyre, and I don't really want to drive it 300 odd miles as it's maiden voyage as it's been off the road for 3 years. So I'd like to probably run around for a day or two before we do that as well. But we'll see. Time is marching on, so that might not happen. But
well, good luck. Hopefully we will see you at the Classic Ford Show on Sunday the 10th of May at the South of England Showground with that Mondeo ST24 with immaculate paint and fine running mechanicals.
If not, I'll be an Atlanta guarded Ranger.
If that's not an incentive enough to go and buy a ticket, I don't know what it is.
Exactly. Will Jamie be there or not? Stay tuned.
All the Cosworths we were talking about earlier on is the incentive to go and buy a ticket.
Yeah, there'll probably be about £1 million worth of Cosworths there.
What about you, Phil? What's your weekend looking like?
Right, well, actually, that's Bank Holiday weekend, which again, will throw up lots of family stuff. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to get down to this, but it's not even car related. You're going to do bikes. Jamie's going to do pickup trucks. I'm going to do old lorries because It's the London to Brighton commercial vehicle run.
Really? Didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. So we produce a classic and vintage commercials magazine and have done for 30 plus years now. And a little bit of trivia. When I started out in this game 28 years ago, when Joe was...
So how old were you, Joe?
Embryonic.
I wasn't even born.
But anyway, I was a sub-editor for Classic and Vintage Commercials magazine. And actually, a little bit of a guilty pleasure, I really enjoyed reading the articles in Classic and Vintage Commercials magazine because it was always about, you know, lorry drivers manhandling these old Albion lorries up the A6 at the Shap Summit, you know, in the depths of winter with no air conditioning and no heating or ventilation of any description. I just sort of think it's a bygone era. And, you know, it's a remarkable part of our kind of automotive history, if you like. And you'll see it laid out on Madeira Drive on the Bank Holiday weekend. And I've never been to it, but our editor, Peter Simpson, who appeared in one of our former chat show episodes, will be down there covering it for the magazine. And I don't know, I think it will be fun. I think it'll be colourful. Yeah. It will be a spectacle. I think, and actually, what's great about big old trucks and things like that is kids love them as well.
Yeah.
They're like life-size Tonka trucks, you know, Tonka toys.
I think that's the universal thing, isn't it? A big red lorry just appeals to everybody.
Yeah. But you can't have a red lorry and a yellow lorry next to each other because you'll never be able to say it.
Well, not very quickly anyway.
No.
So there we go. The vehicles I'm watching will be doing 180 and the vehicles I'm watching will be doing 18 by the sounds.
Yes. 18 uphill on the A6.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant. That sounds fantastic.
Yes. Well, there's variety if nothing else. So, listen, the final part of our chat show wouldn't be complete without our what's caught our eye in the classifieds this week. So Jamie, what has caught your eye?
I had a sudden realization that the Ford Focus Mark II, so the ST225, the 2.5 litre five pot Focus, is 21 years old now.
Wow.
Is sort of, yeah, so it's eligible technically. I mean, what age is a bona fide classic? What age is a classic Ford, and not
that's
just
an entirely different Ford episode, I've got to say, but yes.
It's got old. And you can still pick them. I think they're at the point where they're probably their lowest. So we talk about when I bought the SAF and it was at its cheapest. I think ST Focus is probably at their lowest point at the moment. They will start to come up and you've got, you know, the good ones will start to fetch more money. The rubbish ones will start to die off.
Where has all that time gone? I still think of that as being a new car.
I know.
Is that a sign I'm getting old? Yeah, that blimey.
I remember test driving one, actually, for a piece of university sort of work.
Didn't we have one as a project car, Jamie?
Yeah. Yeah,
like a winner car. It was a winner car. We actually gave it away.
Yeah, yeah. Funny enough, we did a London to Brighton in it.
That's a hilarity.
I remember that engine being lovely, really lovely.
Yeah. The engine's a honey, yeah.
But anyway, go on then, Joe. What have you been looking at?
So the one that's really stoked my interest, and again, it's a long-term thing that I've always wanted. Why are they still there? As you listen to or watch this now, it will have been last week came out, was our Living with a Jaguar XJS. And I still want a Jaguar XJS because they are just fabulous. I mean, the Living With video will tell you all you need to know. They're a nightmare to own and to live with, but they've got a character like nothing else. They look absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, I'm a massive XJS fan. I mean, in a dream world, I would have a V12 one because the character of the V12 ones is that real sense of occasion of this mighty thing pulling you along. It's just wonderful. I would go for a coupe because I'm a sucker for the buttresses. And I would probably go for a later one because the Ford updates they made that made it that much more livable. There we go, more Ford stuff going on. It makes them a better car. But by that point, you're into 6 litre V12 territory. So that really is oil tanker levels of miles per gallon. But if we're talking, I want one. That's what I want. I want a late V12 XJS coupe, please.
Wow, good choice. I like that. Well, we touched on it in last week's episode, but Joe and I went playing in Porsches down at Paragon Porsche in East Sussex. It's a great business, by the way. Joe and I were blown away with it. It's just run by a bunch of people that are real enthusiasts. It's fascinating. The premises started life as an old provincial petrol station. And the guy that manned the pumps
is now head of sales.
He's now one of the head of sales guys, you know, and he's been there 32 years. And the founder, Mark, is still there 34 years on, still races Porsches and everything. Basically, it's in their blood and you can't knock their enthusiasm. I think we could have spent many more hours down there, couldn't we, Joe, just sort of watching the world go by. It was a lovely thing. But Joe mentioned it last week. He got to meet his hero, which was a 997 911. Well, my hero Porsche, being a bit older, is the 993 911. And of course, it sent me down a bit of a rabbit hole of looking at 993s. I've always liked them. I'd never driven one. I got to drive a cabriolet version. And I just sort of, I started flirting with that idea. I can't afford it.
And then you discovered that they're now £80,000.
Yeah, I'd basically have to sell the house and live in the camper van with the 911 parked next to it. But it's just glorious. And they're a little bit cheaper as a cabriolet as well. So, of course, I found myself looking at cabriolets. I guess what I was really surprised with when I drove it was also just how they're relatively easy to drive. I thought they were going to be probably a bit like an older G-Series one where they're a bit, you know, tail happy and everything. Suspension is good, actually. The steering was nice. You still got the offset pedals you get with a lot of European cars that were converted to right-hand drive. But actually, overall, it was a lovely thing to drive. And I could really imagine buying one of those and taking it down to the south of France, Route Napoleon, that kind of stuff. I think that was a meet your heroes moment, and it didn't disappoint. So
that would be quite a good road trip, actually. 93 XJS and a Focus ST.
Yeah. Well, why not? You know, they're all fun cars in their own way, isn't it?
Well, but you'll know we've made it when that video comes out.
Yes. So there we go. An eclectic mix. There we go. Safe to say. And we've probably run out of time, gentlemen. So
we have.
It all went very quickly. But thank you all very much for listening or watching, depending on where you're seeing this chat show. But perhaps you've owned a Fast Ford yourself and you want to let us know, or you've spotted other alternatives to the ones that we've identified. But in the meantime, thanks very much for watching or listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube, or tick follow of the podcast platform of choice. We will see you again next week for another Classics World chat show. In the meantime, thanks again for the support, and we'll see you again soon.
Bye bye.
See you later.